It all begins when Sweet Nan and her out-of-work webmaster husband, Steve, realize they can't afford to keep up the extravagant gift-giving that has become their family's tradition. In an effort to make everyone happy, they announce that they have made a gift to a charity in everyone's name, except it's a fictitious charity. No problem, until the website that Steve creates to seal the deal becomes prey to cyberspace hijinks with deliciously funny and unpredictable results. This is the plot of the play How Water Behaves by Sherry Kramer, the world premiere of which is currently running at Capitol Repertory Theater in Albany, New York. The show is directed by acclaimed theater director Gordon Greenberg and co-stars Niecy Sturgis as Nan and Michael McCory Rose as Hank. Thank you very, very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
It's a delight to have you both both here. So let us begin with, I guess we'll start with you, Michael, as to how you came into this role.
Sure. I had been looking for a play to do, and the director of this play, Gordon Greenberg, as you said, he and I had collaborated before a production of 1776 out at the Paper Mill Playhouse a few years ago. And I knew this was coming up, so I went in for it. And just right from the first first audition when I was reading this play, it spoke to me. It had themes that were interesting to me. Philanthropy in particular is something that I think about a lot. I have friends who work in philanthropy, not-for-profit. I've worked in a little bit, you know, on the side as a side gig. So, and the Sherry Kramer, our playwright, treats it
working
in a
funny
way.
Working in theater is
philanthropy, isn't it? Amen. Yeah, no, I constantly feel like I'm, giving it away. So, frankly, just the piece itself really spoke to me on a few different levels. I mean, it brings together philanthropy, string theory, and, extravagant gift giving, all things that are fun and interesting.
And for you, it meant what?
Oh, wow. Well, when I ran into Sherry after booking the gig at our first read-through in New York, I was with a friend of mine, and I said, oh, it's a play about poverty and philanthropy, because the two main characters are really struggling to make ends meet. And I think most of us can relate to what that's like,
right,
to try to survive in our own lives and how to balance, if we can, contribute to the world somehow at the same time, what that is for us. So, you know, being an actor and now a new mom in my real life, it's like, okay, how do all these pieces fit together, and how can you be your most realized, actualized, generous self at the same time of knowing, okay, I have to keep up with what's expected of me and the consumerist ideas that we've all grown to accept over time.
What is it like for you to be in a world premiere of something that it's happening, we're seeing it, and it's being worked on as you all go through it?
It's the best kind of challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's raw, it's ridiculous, it's thrilling, it's silly.
It's ridiculous.
It is. It is ridiculous because unlike classical theater, which I've done a lot of, you know what's coming. You know what to expect. You have people have ideas about these characters that they're bringing in, and you can sort of play by the rules. With a new play, you're creating that world together. You're discovering it on a daily basis, and it is always shifting based on what you learn together. Of, oh, that piece of information actually needs to come later in the script. It's more powerful if we have this moment happen here instead of there. So it's terrifying, which I think is the most exciting work that you can do. If you're scared of something, you got to do it. So a world premiere is unlike any other experience. And because theater is always, it's live, it's happening in front of you, I feel like that's extra special for the audience.
And do you feel, and Michael, I'll ask you the same question, but do you feel that you're part of the creation? You're part of the ground floor, if you will?
Yes, definitely. And it changes you as you work on it. It's a brand new thing that suddenly you have to find something in yourself, and you're revealed to yourself in a new way when you work on a new piece.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to your second question, this whole process, not only has it been, exciting and invigorating and somewhat new to me in terms of working on a new project, it's been quite democratic, which, full marks to Sherry Kramer, our playwright, for that. She really has proven an incredible ability to respond in real time during the rehearsal process mm-hmm. to, you know, revelations that we have as actors about, you know, how the how our sort of feelings as an actor could illuminate a particular scene, and she's willing to incorporate that into her language and her dialogue, which has just elevated it. I will also say our director Gordon is quite good dramaturgically, mm-hmm. quite good structure wise. So he's been a big player in this show taking shape. You know, not only over the last 3 weeks that we've been in rehearsal, I know they were meeting quite a bit mm-hmm. in the weeks leading up to our first rehearsal too. So yeah, it's been really incredible. You know, I come from, my last few jobs have been shows that have been in the canon a while. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm not going to say coloring outside of the lines is discouraged necessarily, but, you know, there's a formula that works. Whereas right. here we were discovering that, and that was really exciting.
Well, did you, you were in Wicked, right? Where did you just come from that? Or
yeah, just exactly. About a week or 2 weeks before starting rehearsals
wow.
here. Yeah.
So exactly. I mean, that show has been around, obviously, several years.
Sure.
Almost 10, right?
Right.
10? 11.
11.
Yeah. So that is certainly, they put you in a spot and say, okay, now do what the other people have been doing, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I think that's, yeah. I think that's simplifying it to a degree. I mean,
sure.
Yeah. We obviously all have, you know, a certain amount of leeway to kind of do. I mean, ultimately, art and theater is not at its best and not its most compelling when someone is not bringing themselves to
sure.
the role, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. And
absolutely.
But nevertheless, they're casting people who they know are going to deliver a certain proximate, you know, version of what they know sort of works.
They know what they want.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, but nevertheless, I mean, I definitely got an enormous amount of satisfaction in those roles, you know, in that show, you know, doing what I do. But yeah, I think there's a formula that works and, you know, they want to stick with it.
That's what's so interesting about the new play festival that brought How Water Behaves forward is that the audiences of Wicked, they go, they have a great time, and they know what they're going to see, and they can't wait to see that. With How Water Behaves, the the audience, there's something required of them. They have to listen in a new way. They have to offer us their attention in a new way, and it really shapes each performance in unexpected ways that, you know, we're learning from every night.
And for you, you were coming from television,
mm-hmm.
right? From Boardwalk Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's a cool gig.
I'll say, oh my gosh, those people, it's absurd.
You were on for what, five seasons,
five
right?
Five seasons.
For the, and what is, how much comfort is there in that of having, okay, I know that this is going to be a while.
The gig, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's anything in television, film, theater, there's no for sure. There's
sure.
no certainty. I think, you know, artists of any kind have to embrace the unknown and have to get a kick out of, okay, I am going to surrender to whatever opportunities come to me. So I had no idea that I was going to be on the show for five seasons. Things would change constantly. I drove 24 hours once from the South up for an episode, parked my car, got a call from my agent saying, oh, they cut you from that episode. Oh. Okay, great. And it wasn't until the third season, I feel like they realized, hey, you know what? She's not half bad. She's pretty good. We could maybe use this character a little bit. So it started to grow over time.
Yeah.
But that's like, that's any relationship. I mean, you're so fortunate to work in this field where you get to know people and your audience. And
right.
so you're building. And for us and our cast of How Water Behaves, we have this intensely compressed time to create these characters and these relationships. And so it's uber charged. And I feel like with television, there is more time in the day. There's you have the luxury of having all the different elements right in front of you. So you can have a discussion with the costume designer who's always around with their team, or the director or the producers. So it's there is a little bit more, there's a net almost built in as you're working on that work, regardless of how it shifts. I mean, they're changing the script all the time, which is similar.
I've been saying that a lot the last few weeks, is that I feel working
yeah.
on How Water Behaves at Capital Rep has been a little bit like working on TV
yeah.
because you're getting new pages so often.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been really, again, I'm sort of, you know, saying it again, but that's been really exciting. And I think is created.
You got to be a really great on your piece. Game, yeah.
Yeah, and I think exactly. I mean, your adjective charged is a really apt word for what this has been. It's been very intense in great ways, and has made for a really compelling play. You know, that's really timely too.
Yeah.
When you see a new page, do you say, okay, oh, thank goodness, because we needed something there, or do you look at it and say, are we going in a different direction? I mean, in the concern that it would somehow change a profile, an aspect of the performance?
Well, on a personal level, simultaneously, I would be like, wow, and oh, no.
oh, great, more work.
Yes, wow, this is, oh, no. Yes, there would be something new of, oh, she's coming at it from this way now. So that changes the previous three scenes. So now I have to, you know, if you're embroidering something, you've just got to take out those stitches and start again. You're rethreading all the time. But that keeps, there's a vitality in that struggle that I find really interesting as an artist.
I would echo what you're saying completely, and just sort of add that I think the answer to that question depends on where those changes come in the process. Mm-hmm. You know, earlier on, you react to them differently because there's still sort of time. But there's a moment, you know, as an actor, where you see, you know, the clock is counting down to the first time that there you are in the footlights in front of a paying audience, and at that point, you know, you'll do well to have your lines learned. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they're coming at you too close to the day that you're going to be, you know, saying them in front of people, that gets a little bit more anxiety inducing.
Which we hope you enjoy.
Yeah. It's anxiety inducing for us, but please enjoy.
Yeah.
Do not feel our pain. For you, Michael, I'm interested in just, is it a break at all to not be in a musical?
Yeah, actually, completely. And it was one, as I said, that I had sort of sought out. It's a little, when the vast majority of the projects I've done have all been musicals. So, but I love plays as a theater goer. Most of the things I see are plays. And so I had been wanting to, you know, do some work in plays. And so this timing was so perfect, and I'm excited to be doing it. One thing that I sort of hadn't fully appreciated before actually doing this, I suppose there's two things. One, I'm just enjoying the cadence and pacing that we're all creating together that has nothing to do with a conductor and an orchestra, people who you can't see when you're doing a musical mostly.
Right.
And so, you know, we're all creating that pacing together, which I'm just enjoying the chamber aspect of that. Just purely if you didn't even know English and you were just hearing the words.
That's beautiful, yeah.
I'm enjoying that. And then also, you know, just... actually, your previous guest talked about I was just sort of overhearing as we were coming in, this idea of self-censorship.
Right.
That you do, I think, in whatever medium you work in. And in the projects I've done, there's a great deal of that because you're dealing with lots of pieces, choreographical pieces, music pieces, the fact that the show has been out there for 11 years, whatever the case may be. What's been so incredible watching these other six actors I'm working with is the sort of fearlessness that they have thrown themselves into this project. I have learned a great deal in that. And ultimately, as I've said before, when you're being yourself, that's when you're really in the sweet spot. I think that's applicable to anything you do, not just being an actor or mm-hmm. being a writer. And so that's been really... really illuminating and has made a big impression for me.
And for you?
It's interesting because a lot of my castmates do a lot of musicals and I haven't in quite some time. Their level of commitment is so impressive to me. It's something that I feel like when that music hits and you have to deliver a song, they are present in a way that I feel like from plays that have been in the canon for a while, you can sit back and sort of ride that wave instead right. of driving it. And so when I watch someone like Kenita or Leslie or Matt or any of our castmates, Brian, I know that I would get back, and Brian would be like, "Thanks for not saying my name."
Yeah, right.
Brian. Yeah, thanks
Brian,
a lot.
Brian, two Brian.
Yes. There's just this arresting energy it's magical because I'm learning from them about you have to, on a good day, if we're doing our best work, we suspend time. I mean, you do that for people of here we are in our lives, we're going. And
I feel like I've been suspending time.
Marking time.
But we need
free floating, right?
But we need that. We need a moment where we forget about all the time that is weighing on us. And seeing my castmates just come in and deliver a moment with this just absurd courage, I've learned a lot in the same way, and I do feel like it's something that when you have all of these different elements of music and makeup and like all the glitz and glamour of a musical, to strip it down to that moment of just your current of information and passion that you have to bring.
Sure.
That's reinforced something for me in this play that I hope I'm bringing that to the table too.
I remember seeing this in the credits of the show and thinking to myself, it's such a cool name. Your name is very interesting.
Nissy. Yeah.
So how did it come about?
Dun, 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 dun. Okay. So I'll try to give you the.
This is where Nissy comes says this is the 87th time I've explained
this.
No.
Imagine every audition of my entire life. I'll try to do the abbreviated version, but I was supposed to be a boy. My big daddy, that's grandfather in Arkansas, said, Peggy, I'll give you $50,000 if you'll give me a grandson. And so they brought me in and said, Miss Sturgis, you have a beautiful baby girl. And she said, oh no, and passed out. That is the true story. And, so my parents each picked a name. My mama chose Nanka for my great aunt Nanka, who is a composer and pianist, and changed her name from Nancy to Nanka as a stage name. My daddy chose Irene for his mother, and neither of them liked the other one's choice. So they decided to compromise and took my initials N-I-S, Nis, called me Nis for a little while. My mom said that was too masculine. Although if I were a boy, it was going to be Bojo. That's on my Christmas stocking in glitter. Bojo. I would have been a football player. So Nis, and she added an I to that, and that made Nissy. So I've gone by
Nissy.
That. Yeah.
Which I assume is often, because Nissy would be more.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Okay, here's a super quick story on Boardwalk. So I think we're on the fourth season, and the AD was calling me Nissy. And I leaned over to Steve, who is the lead on that show, and said, I was like, do you think it's too late to tell her that it's Nissy? And he said, say my last name. And I said, Buscemi. And he said, it's Buscemi, but I might not be the right person to ask. And I was like, oh,
nice.
Okay, great. So I'm in good company. That's great.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a great story. Yeah. I'm very glad I asked that question. Hot Water Behaves runs at Capital Rep in Albany, New York through February 8th. For ticket and show information, visit capitalrep.org. Nissy Sturgis and Michael McCory Rose. Do you have a story like that about your name, sir?
I'm going to fail so miserably if I were to try to top that.
I thank you both for being with us. What a delight.
Thank you.
Have you
Thanks
both
for having
have
us.
Have a great run. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.